Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Bez Hashem, BPJ, share number 127. That's Bais Pnimi, joint share number 127. We're talking about the importance of emotional intelligence in life, and especially in marriage. And we're going to talk about the various skills and abilities that one needs to develop. And there are 9 listed in this book that we are going through regarding emotional intelligence in marriage relationships. It's called What Smart Couples Know, The Secret to a Happy Relationship by Patricia Kovalt. And the 9 components of emotional intelligence based on her studies are as follows. And this, number 1 is being self-aware and having self-knowledge. This may seem very simple, but there are many, many people out there that just simply don't know themselves. They have to start learning about themselves, both their weaknesses and their strengths. Number 2 is knowing and understanding and regulating and managing your emotions and expressing and using them appropriately and adaptively. This is called emotional regulation. Most people have issues with this. We're human beings. We have emotions. Sometimes we get carried away with it. It's understandable. But very often, we just don't develop that skill. It's underdeveloped. We have the ability to regulate our emotions better than we are right now. And very often, that is the crux of a lot of the disagreements and arguments and agmas nefesh and heartache in marriage and in life, is our inability to regulate our emotions when we need to. Number 3 is empathizing and being attuned to others, especially your spouse, and dealing with your spouse effectively. That's the key of empathy. Of really trying to be in their inner world, try to understand them and feel for them. Number 4 is maintaining hope, positive thinking, and an attitude of optimism. Optimism is a big chelik of emotional intelligence. It's actually an intelligent thing to be optimistic and to have that positive framework in your mind and in your life. Number 5 is keeping the stress from swamping your ability to think, being able to override negative emotions or moods to be able to think and function appropriately. This sort of crosses over with emotional regulation that we discussed just now, but it's learning how to handle distress in a mature way. Number 6 is maintaining enthusiasm and persistence in the face of frustration and setbacks, and having the capacity to tolerate defeat. It's the idea of bouncing back and resiliency. And number 7 is maintaining a sense of self-efficacy, which is what that means is it's a confidence in your ability to exert control over your own behavior. We talked about emotional regulation. This is now your confidence in your able to being doing that. And your confidence actually feeds on the actual ability to be able to do it. The 8th is delayed gratification and controlling and resisting your impulses, both emotionally and in actions. This doesn't just mean physical pleasures like eating and other types of things, but emotionally, working hard through something, working hard through a relationship, and you get the reward at the end when you actually feel that reward by being emotionally close to one another. And the 9th is being self-motivated, managing your emotions to reach your goal. So some of them are interlapping, and we explained in the previous share some of the concepts of the maturity aspects behind this. But we're going to go now into the idea of self-awareness and learning about your strengths, learning about your weaknesses, learning in an objective way about your spouse's strengths and weaknesses, and trying to enhance their strengths and complement their weaknesses not by any type of discipline or judgmentalism, but to work with your spouse and being caring and considerate of it. Your own individual personality and your own individual style has a great impact on the committed relationship of a marriage. It's important to look at who you are and how you became who you are, your behaviors, and the effect that your interactions has with your spouse. So that's really important. You know, we always think about how the other is going to behave, and we very often forget to remember how important it is how we have to behave, how we have to work through things. Now, this book and most of the shiurim is not discounting the fact that there's something called nature versus nurture, meaning there's some genetic factors and upbringing that could influence the person and make it more difficult. Someone had a dysfunctional childhood, it may be harder for them than someone who did not. We're not denying that whatsoever. It is true that it is harder to overcome when you have certain challenges. But the idea is the idea of how nurture, meaning your own self-work and understanding yourself and how you're a bit, you have that ability to grow, takes precedence. You have the ability to develop your emotional intelligence in a way to live fully in the presence. And yes, you may have to work through past aspects. It is true there is emotional hardships that come with prior trauma, and we're not discounting that. And sometimes you need help with that. But it has to be done with a balance. And it is within the ability of the person to make their lives better that way, they really need to do that. Now, there are sometimes extenuating circumstances that would make it difficult to develop that emotional intelligence naturally. For example, if one or both parents were alcoholics, or one or both they were actually perpetrators of physical or emotional or sexual abuse, or emotional and physical neglect. Death of a parent could take a toll. An emotional or mental illness of a spouse or a spouse's parent. Overindulgence, lack of boundaries, lack of love and affection. All of these things, there's no question, could affect their emotional intelligence and how they view their adult relationships. But what one needs to understand is with learning, with training, it can be overcome. Sometimes therapy is needed, but it could be overcome, and you can basically, you have the ability to look past this and break your old patterns and break your old trauma by recognizing it. So that's a very, very important thing. And even if parents were difficult, with proper guidance, you don't lose respect for your parents. You don't stop loving your parents or other relatives that may have not been as healthy as they should have been. But what you do is, with that respect and with that love, you also understand how your behaviors could be very different and could be a lot healthier than the behaviors that your parents exhibited. A big chelik, a big portion of understanding emotional intelligence is to understand your own patterns of attachment. And we talked about attachment theory in other shiurim, not extensively. We won't do it extensively here. I do need to do a lot more research on the nuances and details of it. But to make it very simple and to summarize it into three categories so that each person listening could understand where they are in the spectrum. Everything is, again, healable, fixable, workable, but one needs to understand where they were at. So one category is called the anxious ambivalent. That results in when the mother or the chief caretaker was not being adequately attentive or responsive to the needs of the child, and therefore the way the child reacts because of that neglect is more anxiety is felt than normal. When the mother or chief caretaker leaves, the child is hit with a great sense of anxiety. That's the anxious ambivalent attachment. Another attachment-based thing is avoidant. Avoidant is when the mother or the chief caretaker is also an anxious type or ambivalent, but the child reacts differently. They develop a style instead of anxiety. they develop a style of detachment or emotional aloofness. The child is not anxious when the mother leaves, not interested in her attention. He basically shuts down and detaches. So that's the two opposite effects of a child, either getting more anxious when their mother leaves or detaching, avoiding. And then there is the healthy, secure results, which is when they're adequately responsive and attentive, and the child is happy and self-confident and understands the mother is accessible even when they're not present. There's a security there, secure attachment. And this secure attachment obviously should be the goal of every parent raising children. And that is the idea of nurturing to the point where there is a security there, where the individual is capable of developing a view of themselves as being lovable, as being reliable, as being responsible, era of trust and viewing the world as a safe place, and they could experience closeness in adult relationships without any fear. And that is the concept of a secure, healthy attachment. And all of us that may have not had that in our years, early years, we could develop that type of a security as we get older in our marriage relationships and, of course, in interacting with our own children. While if you don't work on this, then there would be inappropriate anger there and clinging behavior and jealousy and despair, being controlling, and all this could be triggered. Now, John Gottman, who we researched and we talked about two of his books at length, reveals that emotional disengagement is the more predictive indication of divorce than any other factor. And the appropriate emotional engagement is more predictive of a successful and satisfying marriage. So that's an idea of emotional intelligence, is being aware of becoming emotionally engaged and working through with each other with this. So she brings a case where one's father was an alcoholic, the husband unavailable, and the father was an alcoholic, and the husband developed a close, secure bond to his mother, whose life parenting lifestyle was nurturing, but she died of heart failure when he was only nine, and his father didn't provide much care to his mother during her illness, and the husband had taken responsibility of it. And then the mother married someone else who was verbally and physically abusive to the husband. So all this could affect him, and it did affect him. He still had a highly functioning job and highly functioning as an individual, but had these negative patterns because of this trauma that he had, either displaying a clinging, controlling behavior in the relationship. But the bottom line is this person was motivated in therapy to improve, understood what EQ is, what emotional intelligence is, and worked and strived towards it. So basically, we have a choice. We can't change things that happen or our nurture or those type of matzavim we can't change, but we have the ability to develop the muscles of our own EQ, of our own emotional maturity, and to use it wisely. Bracha v'atzlacha.